Good afternoon, Juno. Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. Today's show is a collaboration between the Black Awareness Association of Juno and the KTOO radio station. I'm Christina Michelle, your host, and we are continuing the conversation about music in America and the influence that African Americans have had on the music industry. And we have the honor of speaking with Charles E. Dickerson III, who is the founder, executive director, and conductor of the Inner City Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles. Earlier in today's show, we were also joined by Miss Lori Grace, who is a music teacher and the founder of Lori Grace Music and Future Stars. So we're just going to continue on with the conversation that we've had and learn more today about Mr. Dickerson's work as an orchestra conductor. And Mr. Dickerson, I would just like you to please just reintroduce yourself to our audience for those who were not with us last week, if you would.
Thanks so much. Please call me Chuck, by the way, and I hope all of you, if I ever have the joy of meeting you, there were seven Charleses in our family, and we all got different nicknames, and mine was Chuck. So I like to be referred to that way, and I hope that you will call me that, Christina, particularly today. Thanks so much. So I'm Chuck Dickerson, and I am the executive director and conductor of the Inner City Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles and the Southside Chicago Youth Orchestra. I also am professor of orchestral studies and conducting at California State University, Dominguez Hills in the Los Angeles area. I also serve as director of music at the Rolling Hills United Methodist Church and at Leo Beck Temple, which is at the foot of Bel Air in California. Those are the titles I hold, and primarily I just tell everybody I'm a conductor. And by that, I don't necessarily mean a trained conductor. I'm an orchestra and choral conductor. That's what I do.
Wow. You are a busy man. It seems like any one of those jobs would be full time. How do you find the time to do all of them?
Well, that's kind of you to say. You just, when you have a passion for what you do, and I'm fortunate to be able to do work that I am passionate about, it doesn't seem like work at all. So even though I'm working late into the night at times, even perhaps composing or arranging music, it doesn't feel like I'm working at all. I'm blessed to be able to do something that I love. So yes, a lot of it consumes my time, but I still do have time to kiss my wife every once in a while and hug my children too.
Nice. I love that. Love it. Well, can you explain a little bit about what exactly an orchestra conductor does?
This seems to be a real mystery to people. And, a lot of orchestra conductors enjoy having that mystery about it, because then you're the mysterious person in the room, and everybody kind of looks at you as like with some degree of awe.
Yeah.
Which to those of us who do this work, I honestly think it's kind of foolish, because really the work that we do is, when you look at it, think about it, it's very basic. The very first thing, the most important thing for an orchestra conductor to do is to study the music that he or she is going to conduct and know what the score says, know what the notes are, know what instruments are to play what notes, know what dynamics are called for in the music. And by dynamics, I basically mean how loudly or how softly a certain passages of music should be played, to know the articulations in the music. And by that, I mean like, well, should a particular note be played as an accent or as a staccato note, mm-hmm. or should it be elongated, which we call a tenuto or something of that nature. The most important thing for a conductor to do is to know the score, because the second thing that the conductor then does is the conductor stands in front of the musical ensemble and then conveys to the musical ensemble, this is how this music should be played. And 99% of the work that we do is done off stage. That doesn't mean off podium. It means off stage.
Okay.
So that oftentimes when you see an orchestra conductor conducting a piece of music during a concert, all the work is pretty much done. All that a conductor can do on the podium during concert is pretty much dictate the tempo, meaning how fast or how slow something should go, to give entrances, and to some extent control the dynamic, that being how loudly or softly a bassoon should be played. But most of the work that you do is behind the scenes. It's in rehearsal. It's in preparation, so that when you're going over a certain passage, you can then explain what it is that you want the section of the orchestra, how you would have them to play it. Would you have them play it as march, da-da-da-da-da, or as a brook and a stream just flowing gently down its course? And the most important work that we do is therefore done in rehearsal. Hope that gives you a real quick overview of what an orchestra does.
It does. It does. Thank you so much. And I don't think that I really ever thought about how much work goes into what the conductor does before the show. Because, I mean, as someone who would be sitting in the audience, it looks like this is the main thing right here. You know, when the conductor's standing there and he's conducting, you know, and so you're like, wow, okay. But to think that, yeah, that makes sense, that really is kind of the tip of the iceberg. Like, the real work is unseen.
You know, let me give you another little analogy, if I may. Right now, the NBA finals are going on. You know, we're the coach. And just think of
how much practice
of how much practice a team has to put in before they actually get out on the floor and play the game.
Got it.
It's hours and hours and hours of practice and learning certain plays, so to speak. A basketball team would run, or a football team would run, or batting practice for a baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
How many hours does a baseball player put into just hitting pitches in practice ready for a game? Well, that's what we do in the music world. We put in hours and hours of practice and rehearsal and preparation for concert.
I love that analogy. That really brings it home for me, and hopefully for our listeners too. Thank you. So can you tell us what instruments are played in the orchestra, and on average, how many people tend to be in an orchestra?
Well, now this is going to be kind of a long answer, so get ready.
Okay.
There are basically four families of instruments that are in the orchestra. They're the woodwinds, they're the brasses, there's the percussion, and they're the strings. Now, those are the four families, but the families all have subgroups. For example, in the woodwinds, you basically have four groups of woodwinds. You have flutes, you have oboes, you have the clarinets, and you have bassoons.
Okay.
Generally, in an orchestra, you're only going to have two oboes, but sometimes you'll have a derivative instrument from the oboe, an English horn, which is very much like an oboe. So you might have an alto flute, you might have a piccolo, that's in the flute family. In the clarinets section, oftentimes you have a bass clarinet line. Sometimes you have what's called an E-flat clarinet played. And then in the bassoon family, generally you have either the bassoon or the contrabassoon. So although there's only four families in the woodwind family of instruments, each of those families have subgroups. A saxophone is also a woodwind instrument, by the way, and saxophones, however, are not generally written for for orchestral work. That's the woodwinds. But in the brasses, then we have another four groups. We have horns, which were commonly known as French horns for many years, but the common word today is we just call them horns.
Okay.
We have trumpets, we have trombones, and we have tubas. And then there are derivations of those. For example, you might have an alto trombone. You might have a bass trombone. That gives you an example of how you also break out some of these families. In the percussion family, that is a family that is there's no limit to what kind of instruments you can have. A piano is technically part of the percussion section because we think of percussion as anything that is sounded by you actually hitting something.
Yes.
Clapping can be percussive.
Yes.
Snapping your fingers is percussive. And so chimes are percussive. Cymbals are percussive. Timpani are percussive. Snare drums are percussive.
Okay.
And there are so many different kinds of drums. And then the major part of the orchestra is made up by the strings. And generally you have four kinds of strings, but you have five sections of strings in an orchestra. Okay. The four kinds of strings are the violins, the violas, the cellos, and the basses.
Okay.
But generally, in the violins in an orchestra, you have first violins and second violins. So generally, in an orchestra, you have five lines that the strings play. First violin part, second violin part, viola part, cello part, and bass part. So that makes up an orchestra. Now, generally, when you are about to perform, or in most orchestras, let's go back to the woodwinds, you usually have two woodwinds per family. You have two oboes, you have two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, and two bassoons. Now, there are obviously derivations of that, or else there wouldn't be these other instruments. Sometimes you'll have three or four flutes, and sometimes a piccolo. Sometimes you'll have two or three, you'll have more than two bassoons. You might have three plus maybe even a contrabassoon. But generally, in a classic orchestra, you have two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, and two bassoons. In the brass section, you generally have four horns, either two or three trumpets, depending on what the score calls for, generally two trombones, and more today you have a bass trombone in the brass section. So you have 9, 10, 11 players in your brass section. Sometimes you'll also have a tuba, depending on what the score calls for. Once again, in the percussion section, now in the classic music, in the days of Haydn, who lived in the 1700s and 1800s and is considered the father of the symphony, the only percussion instrument he wrote for was the timpani.
Mm-hmm.
But in today's world, like with George Gershwin playing his music, he's got so many different kinds of percussive instruments that can be unlimited. But generally in an orchestra, you're going to have two or three people who are back there playing the percussion. In a standard orchestra, in terms of the strings, this is where you have the most people in the orchestra. Generally, you have 16 first violins, 14
wow.
second violins,
wow.
12 violas, 10 cellos, and 8 basses. So basically, you have about 60 to 64 string players. And total in the orchestra, you're going to have somewhere between 80 and 90 when you take in the 8 woodwinds, 9 or 10 brasses, two or three percussion, and somewhere between 60 and 65 generally in terms of the strings. So that's how many people are in an orchestra.
Wow.
Now, that was a long answer, and a lot of information there. If you have further questions about it, feel free, or we can move on. Either one.
I don't have any further questions at the moment. That actually really answers it thoroughly. I had no idea how many people were actually in an orchestra. I never really thought about it. I think the only time I've seen an orchestra play live might have been at the Lion King at the Pantages.
Okay.
And I don't remember.
Let me make a comment on that, if I
sure.
may.
Yeah.
What you saw, if you went to the Lion King, is you saw what's called a pit orchestra.
Yes.
You didn't. Yeah. And that's going to be distinguished from a symphonic orchestra.
Got
what
it.
I've described for you is a symphonic orchestra. So
okay.
if you go down to a concert hall and you want to hear a Beethoven symphony or a Bruckner symphony or a Sibelius symphony, you're going to have the kind of instrumentation that I just gave to you.
Got
However,
it.
For Broadway shows, you're basically going to have a pit orchestra of about 20 to maybe 25 performers. The string section is so much smaller, and generally people who write for Broadway, most Broadway productions, the focus is on the singers, and the instrumentation is used as accompaniment, and so therefore oftentimes it is less complex and much smaller.
Makes sense.
So that's probably that would explain why what you saw at the Lion King was so much smaller.
Got it. Wow. Thank you very much. Well, in preparation for today's discussion, you and I had a conversation last week, and you explained some of the history of segregated African-American classical musicians, their struggles to be merged with their white counterparts, their difficulties winning auditions, and so forth. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about this subject?
Thank you for that invitation. I'd be happy to do so. Traditionally, African-Americans did not play in American orchestras. If you think of some of the grand orchestral scores that you've heard, for example, the music to Gone with the Wind, the music to Lawrence of Arabia, huge, beautiful orchestral music. However, there were not any African Americans playing in those orchestras. And the reason was not because we couldn't, not because we didn't have the ability, but because there was a pretty strict code of segregation, particularly during those times, that existed, that impacted our inability to play. We African Americans then took it upon ourselves to try to break into the industry, because frankly, a lot of the money that was being made by the orchestral players who played in those grand scores was much more than what African American musicians were making. And as a matter of fact, in Los Angeles, there was a union. There is a union, the Musicians Union, Local 47, which up until the 60s was segregated, and only white players would get the opportunities to play the great scores in the Hollywood studios, and the black musicians specifically could not. The union made it clear that there was a reason why they thought that African Americans should not be given the opportunity to play in the Hollywood studios, and that was number one. We didn't, quote, have ensemble experience, meaning that we hadn't played in orchestras before, and so therefore, why should we be permitted in now? And number two, that we didn't know the repertoire. So there's a little history here that I'd like to share with your listeners, Christina.
Please.
In 1948 in Los Angeles, an African-American music teacher in the Los Angeles Unified School District, Miss Edith Gunn, began an orchestra in Los Angeles called the Southeast Symphony. And that symphony was created by her and other African-American music teachers specifically to create a place where black musicians could learn ensemble performance and could learn the repertoire, the Beethoven symphonies, the Schubert symphonies, the Mozart symphonies, etc. That organization still exists to this day, although its original purpose being to train African Americans to have the opportunity to play in the Hollywood studios, is not as prevalent today because the doors are now open. Mm-hmm. Segregation has pretty much been eliminated, but we still have such a small representation within that industry because, regrettably, it requires so much commitment, monetary commitment, as well as time commitment, that parents who oftentimes see their young people growing up steer them in other directions because they realize that the chances of them making it in that world are so small. But anyway, so the Southeast Symphony began in 1948, and it continues to this day. Even to this day, I don't know if you're going to play, if your listeners, rather, heard our conversation previously, but even today, our numbers, African-American numbers and Latino numbers, are extremely small in terms of our representation in the workforce of American orchestras. And that's because it's the legacy of segregation still hovers over our industry. We're hopeful that more and more African-Americans and Latinos will win auditions to American orchestras. As a matter of fact, my organization, the Inner City Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles, sponsors the Los Angeles Orchestra Fellowship, which is funded for us by the Andrew Mellon Foundation, and we're thankful to them for that. I had to give them a shout out there, forgive me. But what we specifically do is we are training young, emerging professional musicians of color, primarily African Americans and Latinos, to prepare to take and win auditions in American orchestras. This is still a very difficult challenge within our community, but it's one that we are taking head on, and we hope to be able to change those numbers so that hopefully American orchestras begin to look more like all of America. Yeah. That was a long answer, but there you go.
It's just this topic that we really don't know that we need to be discussing more often, and so I'm glad that we have the opportunity to today. And
thank you for it too, Christina. Thank you.
Absolutely. In my research, I read that it's rare to see more than one or two black musicians in a symphony orchestra. And you mentioned last week that I think you said blacks make up approximately 1 or 1.5% of a classical orchestra, and Latinos are somewhere around 2.5%.
That's right. African Americans make up 1.8% of the workforce of American orchestras, and Latinos make up 2.5% of the workforce of American orchestras. Although both African Americans and Latinos are approximately 13% of the American population. So the difference between 13% and 1.5% is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess if I were to think about it, I've noticed that, but I just always assumed that there wasn't much interest on our part. And so that's my ignorance. I had no idea about the barriers to getting auditions and things of that nature.
Well, yes, there is huge interest in the African American community of playing classical music.
Yeah.
Classical music is really the foundation of just about all kinds of music that you learn. And when you go to take a piano lesson when you're very young, your teacher doesn't start you by playing jazz.
That's right.
Your teacher doesn't start you by playing rock and roll or hip hop. Your teacher starts you with the fundamentals, and the fundamentals are based on the classical traditions, the classical genres. So everybody who's a musician, I'll say just about everybody who's a musician. There's some people who are musicians, if it's fair to call them musicians, but who don't have really the training. But those who have the training, all of that training is based on the classical principles and the classical traditions. And so therefore, I would say the vast majority of musicians, whether they're black, white, orange, purple, or green, all of them have some foundation in the classical tradition. And as a consequence, African Americans, just like anybody else, aspire to become professional classical musicians.
Wow. I'm just blown away by this, because it is an esteemed position. I'm learning to be part of an orchestra, and of course to be the conductor. It really is. It's something that's very, very special. And I'm wondering.
Let me make a comment on that point.
Okay.
About the conducting part.
Yes.
The numbers of African American conductors are even less than the numbers of African Americans in the orchestra.
Mm.
I would ask everybody, your listeners, to close your eyes and just think for a moment. Every time you've seen an orchestra, have you ever even seen anybody black or a person of color or a woman, for that matter, standing in front of the orchestra conducting? Generally, most people think of an older white man.
That's right.
As an orchestra conductor. Well, doggone it, all of us who know this music and love it and want to do that kind of work, all of us aspire to be on that podium, whether it's regardless of the color of your skin or your background or your ethnicity or your gender. And there are just as many capable people of other races, of other ethnicities, of other genders, or gender identities, I'll say, who are capable of serving as orchestra conductors.
Yeah. So you're kind of like a pioneer in this area, it seems.
Well, pioneer, I don't know. I thank you for that. But the first person who ever in the United States who ever conducted the first African American to ever conduct a major orchestra in the United States was William Grant Still, who's primarily known as a composer, but he also did some conducting. He conducted the Los Angeles Philharmonic at the Hollywood Bowl in 1932, I believe it was. And that was the first time that we're on record that we know of as having an African American actually serve as a conductor of a major American orchestras. We have a few now who are employed as conductors in their orchestras. Michael Morgan is an African American who conducts the Oakland Symphony. Rodney Cox is an African American who serves as the associate conductor of the Minnesota Orchestra. And you can find a few more from there, but we are very, very rare.
Wow. Wow. Well, if you're just tuning in today, we are having a conversation with Chuck Dickerson, who is an African-American director and conductor of the Inner City Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles. And we're just going to take a break really quick and go to commercial. And when we come back, we will continue this conversation.